Welcome to the Swiss Info Podcast, a roundup of the biggest stories from this week in Switzerland, plus the business and cultural highlights.
Hello and thanks for downloading Swiss Info's podcast for April the 18th. I'm Thomas Stevens. This week we focus on two things that are close to Swiss hearts, football and shooting things. But to warm you up, a quick pop quiz. What's the Swiss connection between the Brazilian Minister of Culture and Leonard Cohen? All will be revealed later, but first we turn to the subject that everyone's been talking about in Switzerland this week. No, not the Olympic flame, not the imminent global recession, but the shooting of JJ3, a brown bear, on April the 14th. Two-year-old JJ3 arrived in Graubünden from Italy in June 2007, but he soon started raiding rubbish bins and the cantonal government decided to shoot him if he moved into populated areas again, which he did. Local politician Stefan Engler said,
"This was an isolated case of a bear that had no fear of built-up areas or humans, and had therefore become what we call a problem bear. We couldn't take the risk that JJ3 might injure or kill someone."
But animal and environmental protection groups have strongly criticised the shooting. According to the WWF, more should have been done to scare the bear away. Kurt Eichenberger from WWF Switzerland said the shooting of JJ3 was no solution, pointing out that the bear had come very close to humans on his forays, but was never aggressive towards them.
"Dealing with problem bears isn't easy. On the one hand, we can scare the bear away. But on the other hand, public awareness should be improved. Without telling the public what they should be doing, bears will always manage to get into bags of rubbish that are just left out, or bins that are left open."
Da müssen wir uns anpassen.
Kurt Eichenberger from WWF Switzerland. Cantonal authorities, which have spent some 300,000 Swiss francs monitoring JJ3, did try to drive him away with rubber bullets, firecrackers and warning shots, but he just moved on to other populated areas. Not everyone, however, is in mourning for JJ3. The tourism industry is relieved, as many tourists were unsurprisingly having second thoughts about pitching camp in the middle of a bear's territory. Vendelin Correy, director of tourism for the region, said,
"It was a shame that the bear had to be shot, but for our part, we're happy, because the problem bear was turning into a risk bear. The danger to the public and to guests was just too great."
And if more bears stroll into Switzerland as predicted, the authorities said they'd do the same thing again, but stressed that killing animals was a last resort. This is certainly a divisive issue, but Swiss Info's readers are largely critical of the shooting. "This is disgusting and I am appalled," said Tanya in Switzerland. "First, you want the bears to coexist and then you kill them. Action should be taken against these people to ensure this never happens again." According to Charles from the United States, "It looks like the cheese isn't the only thing with holes in it." What do you think? Log on to swissinfo.ch and have your say. There are exactly 50 days until Euro 2008 kicks off in Basel, and for hapless Swiss manager Kirby Kuhn, the tournament can't come soon enough. Kuhn really has had a week to forget. First of all, former Swiss captain Johann Vogel spoke for the first time about being kicked out of the squad by Kuhn last year, accusing Kuhn of giving up after the 2006 World Cup and being completely out of steam. Then it was reported that star Swiss defender Philippe Senderos had had a breakdown after his poor performance for Arsenal against Liverpool in the Champions League semi-finals last week. Kuhn's defence is already stretched and could really do without Senderos having a crisis of confidence, but Senderos' father denied the claims. Then Kuhn was linked with child labour in Pakistan. Well, Credit Suisse were, but Kuhn was taking part in their promotion. It turns out that some of the 200,000 children's footballs being handed out by Credit Suisse have been made on the very cheap by Pakistani children. Kuhn was asked for a comment while signing a few of these balls and justifiably said it was nothing to do with him. On a more positive footballing note, it was revealed that Switzerland were the world champions in collecting Panini football stickers. The Italian company that makes the collectible mugshots said it hoped to sell 65 million packets, each containing 5 stickers, in Switzerland, some 8 stickers per inhabitant. The Germans, lying in second place, managed a mere 2 per inhabitant. And to wrap up this football special, Swiss Info attended a workshop on April the 17th for the 12 referees and various assistants chosen for Euro 2008. Swiss referee Massimo Busacca told Swiss Info what being at the tournament meant to him.
"It's an honour to be as a Swiss referee in this big tournament in Switzerland. So I know I will have more pressure to be here as a Swiss referee, but I already had a big tournament in Germany, so I knew what it was there. How was my preparation to arrive there. And I will keep this experience, and I will try to learn more.
Officials were told to crack down on dangerous tackles, serious descent, and diving during the tournament. But Howard Webb, who will sadly be the only Englishman taking part in Euro 2008, told Swiss Info that such problems are coming under control.
I don't think it's getting worse. I think the message is getting through to players that the game is a thing that needs protecting by referees, but also by players. And some people are turned away from football because of some antics, some behaviours they see on the field of play. And I think players are now realising that, you know, this game is giving them a good living, and you know, they get a lot from the game, and they need to protect it as well. So I think by working together with the referees and the players and maybe the coaches as well, they can get the message through that, you know, simulation is not acceptable. It's a slur on the game that needs to be cut out, and also dissent as well, and confrontation.
Matt Allen in Zurich speaking to English referee Howard Webb. For more Euro-related news, check out Swiss Info's Euro special at swissinfo.ch. We now turn to arguably the highlight of the Swiss cultural calendar, the 42nd Montreux Jazz Festival. The centrepiece of this year's festival, which runs from July the 4th to the 19th, will be a 75th birthday concert for American producer Quincy Jones. But the lineup also includes Joan Baez, Herbie Hancock, Paul Simon, Niles Barkley, and the two Lennies, Cohen and Kravitz. In all, nearly 90 acts will perform on the two main stages, but you'll have to be quick and rich to get the hottest tickets. The most expensive seat costs 380 francs for Quincy Jones. Other concerts are free, but some have already sold out. Brazil's Minister of Culture, also very well known as singer and guitarist Gilberto Gil, will perform on July the 12th. And British rock band Deep Purple, whose classic Smoke on the Water is about a fire at the Montreux Casino in 1971, will close the festival, as they did in 2006. And now a look at this week's Stranger News in our Poddity Roundup. First of all, a tale of two cities, actually countries, that reflect subtle international differences and priorities. Last week, the Japanese government issued a statement of regret that they had managed to kill only half their target number of whales last year. Their goal had been 1,000 whales, but their ships are heading home with only 550 carcasses. It is regrettable we could not carry out the project, said an agriculture minister. Over in Switzerland, on April the 14th, a group of Swiss experts condemned the decapitation of flowers without reason. On a report on the dignity of the creature in the plant world, a federal ethics committee said plants deserved respect, arguing that killing them arbitrarily was morally wrong, except when it comes to saving humans or maybe picking petals off a daisy. Commission member Bernard Bercher suggested at a press conference that such cruel acts would be judged on a case-by-case basis, noting, "the simple pleasure of picking the petals off a daisy might suffice as a reason," adding that "all action that involves plants and the aim to conserve the human species is morally justified." Nor did the commission object to genetic engineering, since this didn't threaten plants' autonomy, that is, their capacity to reproduce or their capacity of adaptation. That story was not a late April Fool's joke. The senseless violence continued when drivers in the evening rush outside Bern witnessed what must be a road rage first. Speeding along the A1 motorway this week, a driver failed to notice in time that the three lanes were merging into two and was forced onto the hard shoulder. However, this, he reckoned, was the fault of a truck driver who had failed to let him in. So he caught up with a truck driver, skidded to a halt in the middle of the motorway, blocking the traffic, leapt out of his car, ran up to the truck driver and suggested, in language not suitable for a family podcast, that next time he pay more attention. The truck driver was probably surprised at this, but he certainly didn't expect what happened next. The driver ran back to his car, opened the boot and whipped out a samurai sword. He then ran back to the truck driver, who was rapidly locking all his doors, and continued to vent his spleen. He then jumped back into his car and sped off, with his boot wide open. If you know anyone with a short temper and a samurai sword in the boot of their car, Bernese police would love to hear from you. And finally, some Euro 2008 related oddness. Austrian police have been sent on an English course ahead of the football championships in June to brush up on their swearing. The idea being that they will then know whether someone is telling them to keep up the good work or something else. One of the more repeatable phrases is, "Hey, copper, why don't you shut up and let us go?" Which I don't expect any self-respecting football hooligan would be caught saying, but there you go. It's not yet known whether Swiss police will follow suit, but they're probably more worried about fans getting copies of the swearing manual and learning how to fling abuse in German. Now it's time for Out and About, where raving Swiss Info journalists report from the far corners of Switzerland. The infamous north face of Switzerland's Eiger Mountain has achieved legendary status amongst the world's climbers since a team of Germans and Austrians first scaled it in 1938. The team was personally congratulated by Adolf Hitler. Now the Eiger is the subject of an exhibition at the Swiss Alpine Museum, looking back over 150 years of climbing history. Claire O'Dea reports.
At just under 4,000 metres, the Eiger is not one of Switzerland's highest mountains, but it is one of the most feared. What makes the Eiger into the Ogre is its 1,800-metre-high north face, a sheer cliff of rock and ice always hidden in shadow. The high point of Eiger fever was in the 1930s, when the first attempts were made to tackle the north face. Climbing fanaticism was strongest amongst Germans, Austrians and Italians. After a succession of tragic failures and intense public debate on the ethics of even attempting such a dangerous climb, a team of two Germans and two Austrians led by Anderl Heckmeier achieved the impossible in 1938. Perhaps inevitably, the sporting achievement became tainted with the politics of the time, as Barbara Gerber, curator of the exhibition, explains.
Heckmeier was in the German army's mountain troops under the Nazi regime. It's still a subject for discussion, but there was no official order from the regime to climb the Eiger in the service of the party or the country. But afterwards, when the attempt was successful, the propaganda machine made use of it.
Climbers attempting the North Face have to contend with deadly landmarks like the Ice Hose, Death Bivouac, Brittle Ledges and Traverse of the Gods. To date, 65 people have lost their lives on the climb. And yet they keep coming. Today's generation of extreme climbers seeks to invent new records and ever greater challenges. Gerber shares the disbelief of many observers.
Uli Steck set a speed record last year of 3 hours 45 minutes, and then people thought that was the fastest possible and that it was unbeatable and crazy. And now this year he improved it by more than 1 hour. That is unimaginably fast.
Those who would like to see the view from the summit without going to extremes can follow in the footsteps of Irishman Charles Barrington. He was the first person to reach the summit of the Eiger 150 years ago, and he went by the less demanding west flank with two Swiss guides.
Claire O'Dea at the Swiss Alpine Museum. Thanks for listening. Learn more about these stories at swissinfo.ch. Turn on, tune in, and download again next week for more Swiss news and views. I'm Thomas Stevens.